Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Serial Killer Podcast, the podcast dedicated to serial killers, who they were, what they did, and how. Episode 172. I am your Norwegian host, Thomas Rosland Vyborg Thun. Tonight, I have a special treat for you, dear listener. Over the years, this show has included some fascinating and rare interviews you will be hard-pressed to find elsewhere. Tonight is no exception. Not only do I speak to a man who is a true aficionado of serial killer lore, but he comes from the very place tonight's topic took and takes place. And the place, dear listener, is somewhere we in the West seldom get too much information about. I am, of course, talking about the great nation of South Africa. My guest and interviewee tonight is none other than Mr. Romano Dolby. Enjoy. As always, I want to publicly thank my elite TSK Producers Club. Their names are Amy, Boo, Brenda, Cassandra, Christy, Cody, Colleen, Connor, Corbin, Craig, Sid, Emily, Fawn, James G, James H, James S, Jared, Jennifer, John, Johnny, Juliet, Caitlin, Kathy, Kevin, Christy, Kylie, Libby, Lisa, Lisbeth, Marilyn, Meow, Missy, Nick, Oakley, Operation Brownie Pockets, Reed, Richard, Russell, Sabina, Scortnia, Scott, Shauna, Sputnik, The Radio, Tim, Tony, Trent, Vanessa, and Val. You are the backbone of the Serial Killer Podcast, and without you, there would be no show. You have my deepest gratitude. Thank you. I am forever grateful for my elite TSK Producers Club, and I want to show you that your patronage is not given in vain. All TSK episodes will be available 100% ad-free to my TSK Producers Club on patreon.com/theserialkillerpodcast. No generic ads, no ad reads, no jingles. I promise. And of course, if you wish to donate $15 a month, that's only $7.50 per episode, you are more than welcome to join the ranks of the TSK Producers Club too. So don't miss out and join now. We'll be right back. So, welcome to the show, the Serial Killer Podcast. The topic of today is South African serial murder, a topic that I am excited to talk to you about because we have had a lot of interaction the last few months regarding this topic. You have done quite a bit of research. I'm color me impressed with your work. Sent me quite a lot of data regarding possible serial killings and actual serial killings in South Africa. But before we get into the juicy details, why don't we let our dear listeners get to know you a little bit, Mr. Dolby? Can you tell us who you are, where you're from, and how this interview came about?
Sure. Hey, Thomas. Thank you for having me. Oh, I'm from South Africa, and let's just say I'm a lawyer. I think there's a whole bunch of different abbreviations and titles around the world. There's barrister, solicitor, advocate, attorney. I think we all just get bunched together as being called lawyers. So I'll just take that title and just say I'm a lawyer. I'm from South Africa, and I'm not a criminologist or anything for that matter. I just have a passion when it comes to serial killers and serial offenders, you know, just trying to see if there's any sort of similarities between them. I've been following a lot of them for years, or a lot of patterns for years. And I actually grew up living between two countries, the UAE and South Africa. So I've been moving back and forth. And at the moment, I'm working in Dubai as a legal advisor for a company here called BNZ. And we do everything from corporate law to criminal law as well. So that's what I'm doing at the moment. And then, yeah, and on the personal front, I'm a dad, I'm a father of two, and a husband of one. And that's it.
Yeah, and you you listened to the Serial Killer Podcast and reached out to me regarding potential South African serial killer case. And that got the ball rolling, as they say. And what started out as, hey, you know, locally here in South Africa, there's been a few murders that I think are serial killer cases, and no one's talking about them. Maybe you could do a segment about that. And that has blossomed into quite a bit of comprehensive data regarding serial killers. I have here in front of me, let's see, 27 cases. Mr. Dolby here has collected and recorded 27 cases of possible serial murderers. So that's not 27 kills, that's 27 possible unique serial killer cases. And each of them have quite a few kills. I mean, we have the most famous one that we need to talk a bit detailed about is, of course, Mr. Sithole, or Sithole, as his name sounds like, with 38 confirmed kills, 76 possible. But we have unidentified cases where there are 10 confirmed kills and 5 additional, and could be many more. So it's a fascinating list. What I would like to start to talk about before we get into the details of the list is South Africa in general, because I've always held a fascination for Africa. For a Norwegian guy living in the West as myself, Africa has always, we know very little about it. We get very little news from Africa. Most of the news we get are tied to local wars in Somalia and Eritrea, and of course, Egypt and the Middle East. South Africa was very much in the front news in the 90s with the end of apartheid. But after apartheid, I feel very much like South Africa has become forgotten. We never hear anything about what's going on there. And I think that's a shame, because Africa is a huge continent and there are so many people living there. And South Africa is a developed country, or at least it used to be, and shares a lot of history with the West. Controversial or not, we do share a lot of history
with the British colonizing it a few hundred years ago, and apartheid, and the Dutch coming in, and the local Africans rising up, and all that very, very colorful, very interesting history. And of course, what happened in South Africa affected the culture and opinions and how we viewed Africa here in the West as well, in a large degree. And if you turn on the news nowadays, you'll never hear a single story from Africa. And I think that's a shame. So hopefully this episode will shed a little bit of light on what actually occurs in South Africa regarding serial murder, which of course is my speciality. When we talk about serial killers, we tend to think that most of serial killers live in the United States of America. As we all know, that's false. There are a lot of serial killers in America, yeah, but the most prolific ones actually live in Latin America. And I suspect that there are serial murders going on in Africa, especially South Africa, that dwarfs a lot of the serial killer cases in Europe and North America. So let's talk about that. And let's start with a bang. Let's talk about the serial killer superstar in South Africa, Mr. Moses Sithole. How do you pronounce his name?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the intro there, Thomas. That sounded very good. With this guy, his pronunciation is Moses Sithole, and he's definitely one of the, I guess, as you call it, you always say the rock stars of serial killers. He's definitely up there. He was also known as the ABC killer, the South African strangler, the Gauteng killer. So he had a few different aliases, and he was operating between 94 to 95, they say, which I doubt is always, I don't know if he was caught then or if he was operating then. And as you say, 38 confirmed, 76 possible. The modus, or the way that he used to lure the victims out, was the promise of jobs. You know, at this point, you're looking at a time period, as you say. I don't like, you know, diving into the whole political aspect of it, but as jobs or job creation started to decline, some of these guys would take advantage of that and they would run with it. And that's what he did. Is he did that, and then obviously the victims suffered. They were beaten, raped, and strangled. And the thing that I want to basically hammer on during this as well is I'm focusing on specifically Pretoria within the Gauteng district. And the reason being is my theory is there's an area in Pretoria called Attridgeville, which has produced more serial killers, I suspect, than, I don't want to say any other part in South Africa, because it's not as well studied as it would be in the US or even the UK for that matter. But the part of Pretoria is called Attridgeville in Pretoria, and that's also a part of where Moses Sithole operated. You know, he operated in Attridgeville and Boksburg. So it's quite interesting with him as well. A lot of these guys seem to come from a background where what they want, they will get, you know. So if they want something from someone, they will take what they want. And I feel like a lot of these guys are following the same kind of processes.
Right. And for our uninitiated listeners, where in South Africa is Pretoria located?
So Pretoria is one of the three capitals, and it's located in a province called Gauteng. Gauteng is basically the half the size of West Virginia in the States. And then Pretoria is roughly the size of Suffolk County in Virginia. So it's just to give you some perspective as to the size. It's not a big area at all. It's nothing that is that we can say it's of substantial size or anything. But it's also where the union buildings are located. And a lot of, you know, the officials stay there as well. So it's my home town, in other words, as well, Pretoria City, the Pretoria area in general.
I didn't quite catch it. Is it in the north, south, west, east of the country?
It's pretty centralized. Well, not centralized, but it's not on the coast itself. I'll send you a map as well, so you can have a look at that if you like. It's more inland than on the coast. It's about 8 hours drive, 7 hours drive from the coast.
Right. So, and am I correct in thinking that Pretoria is the Dutch capital of South Africa, if I can informally call it that?
Yeah, Pretoria was based on President Pretorius. So that's what it's based on, is the name as well. It's one of the three capital cities in South Africa.
Yeah. In South Africa, you have the British, which colonized the place, but you also have the Dutch, which also had large interests in South Africa.
Yeah, definitely. There were different ones. So there was obviously the British came in and the Dutch were here, and then we had the French Huguenots as well. So there's threefold people who were colonizing. We had the fur trekkers that trekked all the way to Pretoria as well. So there's a whole bunch of different nationalities at the moment. I mean, South Africa's got, I think we're up to 12 official languages, if I'm not mistaken. So it's very difficult to determine now which, you know, who comes from where and who owns what, which is also a lot of the disputes are arising as a result of that. So there's a whole bunch of, I guess, disputes arising as a result of that, not knowing who comes from where, because it's been around for quite a long time. And, you know, because of the trade routes, there's always this dispute as to who was first in South Africa and who was last and who does land belong to. And it's, again, political stuff that I guess, you know, if you wanted to flow over into decision making, it can. But yeah, for me, I'm not, I studied law, so I kind of just stick with that.
Yeah, let's stay very well clear of politics. I make that very clear in my podcast that politics is a no-go zone. It divides people, and there's just no room for it. But it's just nice to put some context to where we are, so people can get a feel for feel of the land and understand the background a little bit. So, and Pretoria was your hometown, so that's where you grew up. This will be perhaps a little bit on the side, but you mentioned to me that you had played around as a kid in an area where they now have found bodies. Is that right?
Yeah, I think as a kid, you know, we grew up, I was moving back and forth between the UAE and obviously South Africa, but in Pretoria, my granddad was a nature conservationist. He's retired now, but back in the day, right after he retired, we used to go into the bush and, you know, do all the things that we used to do with my cousins, and we would go and catch snakes and scorpions and just really stuff that other people don't really like that much, but it's what we did because it's how we grew up. And one of the activities we used to do is go hunt for crabs in one of the local rivers there. It's called the Arpies River. It's translated into the Monkeys River, basically. Yeah, unbeknownst to me that a few years later, you know, they would find a lot of bodies next to streams and rivers along that area, and then the Arpies River. The Arpies River is quite big as well. You can't just say that it was like it in one piece, because they've got small, it's got small little tributaries and areas where you can't actually access sometimes. It's just one of those things, once again, where you look at it and you think, wow, you know, you as a kid, you actually hung out here, and today you wouldn't dare to go there. It's just too dangerous. The same with camping as well. It's the same kind of process. You know, you're looking into rivers and dams and lakes and things, then there's unfortunately this trend towards violence when it comes to you trying to go camping or anything for that matter.
Really? So what you're saying is that as a child, you could go out and play in the bush, in the wild areas of your hometown, and no one would bother you. But if you were to do that now, you would be in grave risk of being robbed or worse.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are still in denial when we talk about it. And as much as I love Pretoria and I miss my family, and as much as I think it's, you know, it'll always be home, you still have that hesitation. And that's the reason why a lot of South Africans have moved away, you know, is just it's too dangerous. When you wake up in the middle of the night and you hear a sound and you have to grab your flashlight and a gun to try and see what's going on, as opposed to just sleeping through it and thinking, oh, well, everything's fine, the kids are fine, then, you know, it's time for you to wake up. But again, it's, some people are a little bit more in denial than others, and some people just don't have the means to move away, which is unfortunate. And other people don't want to move away, in all respect to them, you know. It's at the end of the day, it's everyone's choice what they want to do. If they feel like if they want to stay there and they feel safe, then maybe it's just me being paranoid. Who knows?
Well, judging from the statistics you sent me, I wouldn't say that you sound paranoid. I would say you sound rational. And of course, I have heard a lot about South Africa when it comes to violence. Mostly, I've read about violence in Cape Town, the largest city, I guess, or perhaps Johannesburg is bigger.
I wish I could tell you. I haven't actually looked at that, to be honest. I know that obviously with Cape Town, you've got a lot of crime. The crimes that are rampant would be drug related as well. You know, I'd run into the Cape Flats. And then if you look at Paulsmoor Prison and places like that, I'm sure you've seen documentaries where they go into the gang related, you know, crimes such as, you know, methamphetamine related crimes and drug related. There's one documentary where I think they talk to an inmate. I can't remember his name for the life of me, but it was also at Paulsmoor where they talk about the different gangs and the number gangs, you know. So, yes, the Cape itself, there are certain areas that can be quite dangerous and crimes are quite prevalent. But I think there are also parts of the Cape that is probably the safest to be in South Africa. So, again, it's those complete opposites, you know. It's like just complete, it's like two magnets, plus and a minus, you know.
Right. One of the things I read about this is a few years ago, but again, this was a friend of mine had studied in Cape Town. And he went backpacking around the area and was couch surfing. He was kind of a hippie dude. And he told me, and I don't know if this is true or not, but he told me quite a fascinating thing, that it's so common for cars being, when you stop for a red light in Cape Town, it was so common for that car to be hijacked or robbed, people just running up with a gun and saying, get out of the car or give me all your money or stuff like that, that there were certain individuals who had installed flamethrowers on the side of the car.
You press the button and
you put the guy on fire.
Yeah, I've heard that actually. I've heard that as well. I think we all had a friend that said that did that at some point. But yeah, no, it's not just a rumor. It's actually quite well known. I think everyone I've known has been in a situation where it's either been kind of like a snatch and grab situation or actually try to hijack your car. So there's actually a hijack list of cars that are more vulnerable as well that's released every year to say, look, these cars are more, they want them more than the other cars. And here's the list of which cars to avoid buying.
Jesus.
So when you get to that point, you know, and then there are the rumors of, you know, they steal certain cars to drive them over the border to sell them there or to strip them for parts, or it's quite interesting to see and to find that you now have to purchase your car in terms of which won't be stolen or which way it will be stolen, which would be the least likely to be stolen. So those are the things that they don't tell you. But yes, hijackings and snatch and grabs are quite prevalent in certain areas. Well, in the most of South Africa now, anyway, but obviously more in certain areas than in others. The Cape, for one, definitely. Johannesburg, PE, Pretoria, definitely. They're all up there, definitely.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, for a guy like me living in very safe and sound Norway, it just sounds insane that it would be that prevalent of a case. And the lists you mentioned with, these are the cars that you should buy if you don't want to be hijacked. that's insane. I've also read that personal security is something you can purchase, and it's quite popular with ads and billboards and stuff. With you can rent like personal bodyguards and stuff like that. Is that still a thing? Or
well, look, if the bodyguards thing was a thing, I wish I had the money for that, to be honest. But yeah, look, security is probably one of the most popular, I guess, part of, I don't know how to say it, industries in South Africa, would be the way to go. It would be a multi-million, billion rand industry in South Africa. And a lot of people understand that. But at the end of the day, a lot of these companies, such, I'm not going to give names away, but a lot of the companies are actually suspected in being a part of these crimes as well. So it's been proven as well. So that's the problem, is trying to find out who's trustworthy and who's not. You know, when someone happens to be off duty, break-ins might occur. And how do these guys know that the guy who's supposed to be on duty is off duty? So small little things like that to take into account is the corruption of some of the companies itself. So you're looking at people to protect you, and a lot of the time they don't. So what do you do yourself now? Do you get a gun? Do you believe in gun control? Do you believe in anything else? Do you believe in, you know, trying to keep your family safe, but then possibly going to jail for doing so? And then looking into things like the Firearms Control Act and trying to find out what sort of gun you can keep legally and what the steps would be. And then also understanding that they are making it a little bit more difficult as time progresses as well, to try and keep everyone from keeping guns. But then at the end of the day, the criminals don't give a damn about that. They steal a lot of the guns from the police. So yes, you know, the criminals don't care about the laws, you know?
No, that's what's making them criminals. Yes. So, as you understand, my dear listeners, South Africa is a very exciting country. With unfortunately, several places in South Africa is quite rife with serious crime. And the most serious of crimes is, of course, serial murder. So let's get back to the list that you sent me. I'd like to go through it. So instead of like a typical serial killer expose, say, I thought we could just go through and just get a picture of, and remember, listener, this is from one area. This is Pretoria. So I mean, in the whole of South Africa, there's far, far more. And this is also, a lot of these crimes, they're quite recent. So yeah, keep that in mind. So number one is Elias, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name, Sitavudzi.
That's I would pronounce it the same way.
That's Xitavhudzi. His nickname was Pangaman, which is more easy to pronounce. And this is one of the older cases in the 1950s. He killed 16 men and women. So can you tell us a little bit about him?
Pangaman is basically, Panga is Afrikaans for machete. So there's not much that is known about. Well, I mean, there's a few things written about him and normal documentary parts of it, obviously. But basically murdered these individuals by machete. So, yeah, he was also, again, from that, as we say, or as you said before, Pretoria, yes, small, as I said before, as it is, roughly the son of Suffolk County in Virginia. But even worse than that is the area within Pretoria. He's, again, then operating in Atteridgeville. So that is the part that gets to me every single time, is these guys on the list, they all hail from that one little area in Pretoria, which bothers me quite a bit. So if you look at Pretoria, you'll see that Pretoria Central, there are different areas in Pretoria. This guy operated in the western part of it, or the west from Pretoria Central, in that little area. And if you're looking at the other guys as well, which you'll get to, you'll notice the same kind of trend, is that it seems that for all intents and purposes, I think what he was doing, Elias, is he was operating, if it is him, murdering a lot of white people, if I recall correctly. So he was one of those apartheid fighters. It might be him, but it might also be the guy next on the list. I can't remember which one of the two it was. It might actually be the next guy up, but I doubt it, because I see his his victimology is a little bit different as well. So my belief is strong that Elias was responsible for a lot of the murders on white folks.
Yes, you are quite correct in your assumptions. I'm reading on Wikipedia here, and Elias Sitavudzi, he murdered 16 men and women in Atteridgeville in the 1950s, and he targeted only whites. So he was a black guy, and he went into the strictly segregated community of whites and killed 16 people with a machete. So he mutilated his victims as well.
If you think about a machete kill as well, you know, it's nothing that's clean. It would be something that's done out of anger as well. It's not something that's done quick and quietly and under the radar. You know, if you're doing strangulation, you can kind of detail, or you can keep someone quiet to some extent. Whereas if it's a machete kill, what do? Do you stalk someone while they're sleeping? Do you do it while they're awake? It's something that's a brutal, brutal death.
It's a very brutal death indeed. A machete, for my listeners who for some reason might not know what it is, it's a very large knife. It's almost like a sword, but it's quite broad. It's a broad blade. It's a very simple weapon, which is why it is often used in conflicts all across Africa. The most famous use of machete for us Westerners is, of course, Rwanda. In 1994, in the genocide there, where 2 million people were butchered with machetes. Dolby here correctly told you it is a brutal and also very painful way to die, unless you're very lucky. I mean, if you get struck, I guess, very hard on top of your head with a machete, your brain will splatter out and you'll probably die instantaneously. But most of the time, machete kills, they are against your arms, your torso, your throat, your face. It's quite painful, and often the victims bleed out from blood loss. It's extremely painful, and also it would have been very loud, as Dolby also correctly pointed out. I mean, the victim would scream when you're hit. So yeah, he was tried and convicted of 16 murders. He was sentenced to death and he was hanged on the 14th of November in 1960. So that's the first one on the list.
One of the upsides, right, is before the death penalty was abolished, it was quite readily, you know, available back in the day, and they would apply it quite readily as well. So I guess that's the upside of that. Obviously, losing 16 people to one person is always a downside.
Yeah, he was executed, and South Africa, you guys had the death penalty for quite a long time, I think.
Yeah, it was abolished. I can't remember the year now, but the matter was the state versus Makwanyane, and then they abolished it after deciding that it was inhumane.
All right. So, do you know if it was the 80s or 90s? Or
I think it was the 90s.
Right. So, moving on, the next on the list is Johannes Mashiane. Again, there will be names on this list that I am uncertain if I pronounce correctly. The last name is Mashiane, Mashiane.
Yeah.
Beast of Attridgeville, operated 1977 to 1982 up until 1989. Killed his girlfriend and 12 boys.
Yeah, quite an interesting fellow, I find. He was one of those, I think, if I recall correctly, he killed his girlfriend first, and then with the boys, it was either with strangulation or stoning. So I'm guessing it was, I'm not a criminologist or a psychiatrist or psychologist or anything to that extent, but from the trends in the past, these guys usually experience sexual gratification in terms of the violence that they, you know, apply. So with the strangulation, the stoning, I'm guessing, especially the strangulation, because it's up close and personal, it's something that he would probably have received that. And what happened with him, as you can see, his nickname is the Beast of Attridgeville. So again, the place Attridgeville comes into play, and that's where he operated once again. And I see that he committed suicide in 1989 because he was running away from the police, if I recall correctly, and he ran in front of a bus by accident or under a bus while being chased. So, yeah, doing the typical serial killer psychopathic thing and taking control and deciding that this is how it's going to go and no one else is going to decide what happens to me, you know?
Yeah, it's quite limited amount of information about him online, but...
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
You are correct. Yeah. He was running from the police and threw himself in front of a bus, which promptly ran him over and thus killed him. And he raped his victims.
Yeah.
Young boys. Yeah. Doesn't say the age of the boys. That's a bit annoying.
No, it doesn't. I try to find that as well. Unfortunately, as you'll come to know with the rest of this as well, is the information for the known serial killers is there. But as we move along with the unknown guys, a lot of the articles have been removed for some reason. I would read them years ago and then try to find the same article and it would be non-existent. Mm. So I don't know if back in the day they just didn't focus. Obviously, I mean, we're looking at the dates here. It's 1977 to 82. If you're looking at criminal profiling back then in the States, even it was something that was quite limited. So the profile saying that this is a serial killer must have only come much later from the South African side, you know? So I guess the information that they have is quite limited as well.
Yeah. And when it comes to serial murder and publicity and the information available to the public, a lot of authoritarian states put a lid on everything regarding serial murder. The Soviet Union is a prime example, which denied that serial murder occurred in the Soviet Union all the way up until Citizen X was found out, thanks to one very diligent police officer. And I will do a separate episode on him, but that was the official policy, that serial murder was a Western decadent phenomenon that did not occur in the Soviet Union. And I can readily imagine the authorities in South Africa actively obfuscating and limiting information regarding South African serial killers, because they are always fascinating to most people. They always draw a lot of attention, and it's always very negative. And it puts the state in a bad light. So when you say that you read articles a while ago and now those articles are gone, that does not surprise me. That is very typical when it comes to the way authorities operate, especially in states where the term free press is not exactly, is not exactly free. And I mean, South Africa in the 70s and 80s, apartheid, there was no free speech. Everything was strictly controlled. It's probably better today, but from what I'm reading, it's far from good.
Yeah, you're right. I think the problem is as well is, I don't know if it is better today. That's the part that bothers me, is these other murders that I read about were happening, I think it was 2005, 2006, it might have been even 2008. I can't remember for the life of me once again, but these are the articles that I read, and they just seem to have just evaporated into nothing. But it's just strange.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. And when it goes on in a large scale, when it's actively repressed by the authorities, we're not saying that that is definitely happening, but it might be. But when that sort of thing happens, then serial killers will have even more leverage and freedom to pursue their deviant desires without being caught, because the public not cause a stir as they would if it was in the newspapers every day. Then people would rise up and demand the authorities take action. But if the newspapers aren't talking about it, then people simply don't know, and they don't have to spend resources pursuing these killers. Anyway, Mr. Marciani, he murdered his girlfriend and raped and sodomized at least 12 young boys. He strangled them, but he also stoned them, which to me sounds very strange. I mean, it's very limited what's available online. I mean, stoning traditionally is you bury someone up to their waist, arms at their sides so they can't shield themselves or dig out. And from a certain distance away, you throw stones at them until they die. It's one of the most painful ways you can die. It takes a long time, and it's extremely brutal. And the victim
is quite sadistic, I think. Very, very sadistic.
It's very sadistic. And so it makes me question whether it's he actually stoned them like that, or if he used a stone to bash their skull in, which, I mean, sounds more...
Yeah, I was thinking the same, because obviously those are very, very different methods of murder. You got strangulation on the one side, which is close and personal, and in your personal space, and invading it and feeling the life drain out of someone, which is quite close, as I say, whereas with stoning, as you describe it in the traditional sense, is from a bit of a distance. So I think stoning in this would probably involve something that deviates from the traditional sense of stoning, perhaps.
Yeah. I suspect, and again, I'm not an expert in the case in any way, but I suspect that it's a matter of maybe things lost in translation, that he used a stone to kill his victims by probably bashing their heads in. But I kind of doubt that he took the time and effort to rape his victims, young boys, and then bury them and line them up and throw stones at them. It sounds very odd, especially when a lot of his other victims were strangled, which is, as you say, very up close and personal. Sounds strange. But anyway, he used a stone to kill them. And no matter the distance, very, very brutal, very, very painful. And especially considering that he raped these young boys, and if there were children, as I suspect there were, that's also extremely painful. And it would probably cause tearing, rupturing, massive blood loss. Yeah, horrible. And yeah, he killed himself, which is probably a fate better than what he deserved. But an apt nickname, the Beast of Attridgeville.
Yeah, that's it.
And then we have Moses Itoli, which we have talked about. And then we have another one with a difficult name, Sello Abram Maponya.
Yeah, no, the reason, Thomas, sorry to interrupt, the reason I put Sello Abram Maponya on here is because I find his behavior, because they say that it's still in unconfirmed deaths, I do still find his behavior one of those where if you look at, for instance, Joseph DeAngelo, the Golden State Killer, and you look at that progressive behavior where there's a lot of, it progresses from being a peeping Tom to snatching things and breaking in and robberies, and then it progresses to, you know, rape, and then it goes to murder. I find it quite confronting that we have someone that was operating from 2014 to 2019, and he was convicted of 41 rapes, 40 counts of robbery with aggravating circumstances, which it's just very reminiscent of the behavior of Joseph DeAngelo once again, you know, is that just progressively becoming worse and worse. So I put him down there because I think, you know, at the end of the day, you can't say that he won't be suspected of murders or anything like that. I think he would probably be, but they don't have the evidence at this point because of, I don't know what reasons, maybe a lack of support or something like that.
Exactly. Well, it's one of those things. I'm very happy you put him on the list, because then we can discuss. As you say, serial killers, they progress. That's very typical. You don't start out, well, some do, but most do not start out going and killing and then waiting a bit and then killing again and then waiting a bit and then killing again. That's not the way it progresses. They start out by being peeping Toms or torturing and killing small animals as a kid, maybe being bullies. They start out by being criminals, maybe shoplifting, simple robbery. And then perhaps they progress to violent assault. They escalate to rape, maybe home invasions. Golden State Killer, he was very fond of home invasions, where he entered the homes of his victims and snuck up on them while they were sleeping and demanded they perform sexual favors for him. And then sometimes he let them live, and other times he killed them. Again, I'm digressing, but the Golden State Killer, Joseph DeAngelo, he also tortured and terrorized his victims afterwards by calling them and leaving ominous messages and never letting them have a peace of mind. But this Maponya individual, which operated in 2014 to 2019, he is luckily arrested, convicted to 988 years imprisonment. That's quite a long time. Yeah. I guess you have actual life in prison in South Africa. You don't have the way we do in Norway, where it's a maximum amount and then you're let go.
Yeah, look, I think the problem as well, once again, I sound like I'm bitching about it because and I don't want to sound like that, but, you know, there's unfortunately, when we're talking about the topic of, you know, people being convicted of these crimes or any other crimes and then being sentenced or detained or whatever to prison, there's a lot of the time these guys get off because the prisons are overcrowded. So I'm not saying that he would be, because obviously his crimes are quite severe, but the scale indicates that a lot of the people who are sentenced to prison do get released much earlier, and it's not quite what we expect it to be, but it is. So he would probably die in prison, definitely. But I see also with Moses Sithole, he got sentenced to 2,410 years in Pretoria CMAX. So hopefully, you know, technology doesn't catch up and they can be frozen.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing that these men do not see the light of day, which is probably a good thing, because they have inflicted untold amounts of suffering on other people. And he's a very interesting case, because, as you say, convicted of 41 rapes and 40 counts of robbery with aggravating circumstances. So that's violent robbery. And yeah, 41 now, rapes.
You see, I'm not saying that he definitely murdered someone, but as we've seen the trend in the past before, these guys do progress. You know, it's just a matter of, it's been seen time after time. I mean, even if you look at Ted Bundy, which you did an excellent expose on, by the way, I followed that to the T, and then I'm not even going to mention the others. I've listened to all of them nonstop, but even if you look at Ted Bundy, I mean, he also broke in, if I'm not mistaken, and he stole some items from various houses. And it's quite common amongst serial killers to do that, to break in and steal items and then to progress to the next thing, as you said before, peeping Toms and stuff. So I'm not saying that he did, definitely, but I'm putting him on the list because I think he's a serial offender and he should be looked at a little bit closer. And if we had the technology that the States had into looking into familial DNA and ancestry and ancestral DNA, I can't remember how to pronounce it, but in the same cases with Joe DeAngelo, you might be able to find more details about it and to the other crimes, which the police, in all fairness, may be investigating. Again, I'm not saying that they aren't, but I'm just putting him on the list just because I think he would be on there, definitely.
Well, yeah, I think you did a good job there. And especially considering that further down the list, we have several unknowns in the same area.
Again, Ertridgeville, and, you know, this guy's also Ertridgeville once again.
Yeah. So he might be behind those. We don't know. And for someone to do that many rapes and that many robberies, that smacks of a serial murderer, at least in the making. If not, in fact, de facto. So, yeah, it's interesting. And moving on, we have Richard Jubulani Nyauza. Jesus, that's a difficult name.
These guys follow pretty much the same kind of trend. I see he operated a little bit earlier. So he was from the year 2002 to 2006. Also, Pretoria area, 11-eyed Bosch serial killer is what they called him, which is interesting since Silla Abram Aponya also operated in 11-eyed Bosch. He was, the guy you talked about before, he was in Ertridgeville, Namalodi, 11-eyed Bosch, as well as Silverton, which is all Pretoria as well. But it's just interesting to see that there's a bit of a time difference between them, but they both operated in the same or similar area. And then obviously the one, we don't have any confirmed murders, but just saying again, that general theme, general area, you know, it's interesting to me again. And you'll see that his sentence says that he got 16 life terms on 16 murder charges and a further 140 years imprisonment on charges of rape, robbery, and attempted murder. So that just reiterates what I said before. You know, you got a robbery, you got a rape, you got all those that is in the making of a serial killer, as you elegantly put it, you know, is these guys do other things other than serial killing.
Yeah. That's very important to remember that the vast majority of serial killers are not like Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy was not a petty criminal. He, as far as we know, he did not engage in robberies and theft and fraud and that sort of thing. He sticked to sexual crimes. He was a peeping Tom, started out and like that, and then he went on to rape and battery. And eventually murder, because that was his fantasy. That was his hidden life that he kept strictly separated from his normal life, which was as an upstanding citizen. But Ted Bundy was an anomaly. He's not a typical serial killer. People think that Ted Bundy was like the archetype of a serial killer. He was not. He was an anomaly. The vast majority of serial murderers are psychopaths who do not care about the law. They don't care about rules of society. If they want something, as you said, they just take it. And if that means they want sex, well, then they go out and rape. If they see something material that they would like, they go and steal it. If they find opportunity for fraud, which is easier than doing a regular 8-to-4 job, they go and do fraud. And of course, if they feel a need to kill, they kill. So it's the psychopathy personality traits that kick in. And this is obviously the case of Mr. Nyauza here, who did robbery, rape, and of course, murder. 16 women. And he raped and killed them, as far as I can tell. Again, limited information available online, which is very unfortunate.
And, you know, we're talking about 2002 to 2006. So the excuse of saying there's just nothing about him is just bullshit, my opinion, because now we're looking at the 2000s. It's not a matter of having to be censored or anything. This should be made public. And I know it's horrible to say that, but then at the end of the day, you're looking at details that could help solve future crimes or that public could be made aware of to look out for.
So I found an article regarding Nyauza. There was not many, but I found one. And it's from his court case. They found his DNA inside four of his victims. There was also cell phone evidence. Nyauza pointed out 7 of the murder scenes to police. And the authorities, they linked and concluded that he was the murderer of all the cases he was charged with. And he killed them using a screwdriver. Stabbed them with a screwdriver, which is...
I mean, of all the methods, you know, it's just, again, that's a new method. And I find that a lot of the guys we're talking about are very disorganized killers as well. They'll use whatever is at their disposal. You'll see with the next guy, for instance, which I'm not going to get ahead of myself, but it's the same kind of situation. The same was true with Moses Atola, you know. He would use stockings and underwear of the victims, and he would use whatever was at hand. It's the same. It's not as organized as some serial killers, which if we look at the States, for instance, with Dennis Rader, he was quite organized. He would plan ahead, and he would watch the victims, and he would have a list of who he was going to, you know, look into. Whereas these guys are more opportunistic. They use the surrounding areas to, I guess, lure the victims into a false sense of security and gain their trust. And the same is true with this guy. It's just interesting.
Yes, indeed. And I mean, BTK, one of the superstars, he called it his project. So yeah, he made folders, and he planned it ahead, well ahead of time, and he knew all the ins and outs, just like, I mean, in the movies. He was like a talking, walking horror movie, just in real life.
Oh, yeah, he was. He's a typical guy you don't suspect at all, you know.
You can, in some ways, you can categorize serial killers very broadly into two camps. You have the organized, meticulous serial killers, and then you have the opportunistic serial killers. The organized ones are the ones that are the rarest, but they are also the scariest because they hide behind a persona of normalcy and live perfectly normal lives. They're not criminals in their day-to-day lives. Often they have families. But then, as a hobby, they go out and kill and torture. And they view it as their own special projects. But this guy, moving back to Nyauza, he told police, and I quote, "Women did not deserve to live because a woman had given him AIDS." So talk about painting in broad strokes. One woman gave him AIDS, so all women needed to die.
Yeah, you know, it's just scum, to be honest, you know. It's a shitty reason, first of all. And the reason you got AIDS is not because of the woman, it's because of yourself. So I think that reasoning behind it is just, again, pointing at the psychopathy of some of the guys trying to find a reasoning behind why you do what you do.
Yes. And I mean, I'm reading about, there's a bit more detail here. And one woman, she survived Nyauza's killing spree, and she was repeatedly stabbed with a screwdriver, then strangled. She passed out, and then Nyauza, he left her for dead. She was pregnant at the time, so she lost her unborn baby. She partially lost her sight, and she lost the use of her one hand. And to top it off, she was also, it doesn't say here, but she was probably infected with AIDS. So talk about ruining someone's life. I mean, it's just awful. As the prosecutor said, and I think he said it more eloquently than I, "You are an evil, perverted social murderer who poses..." No, "You are an evil, perverted serial murderer who poses an extreme danger to society in general and women in particular." End quote.
Yeah, and you know, coming from a legal standpoint, it's difficult for me having to be impartial with what you say or what you think, because at the end of the day, you were all human. But your first reaction is, what a piece of shit. And it's unfortunately the way that we think as people is, how can one person do that to another person? Just, you know, just carry on with life as if nothing's wrong. But yeah, that's very well put. Very, very well put.
And again, we come back to what is focused on. What is it that the media pays attention to when it comes to these serial killers? It's not the victims, it's the serial killer. And I think that's unfortunate, because luckily in this case, one woman was in fact We was told of the fate of one of the unfortunate women who survived his attack, but there are so many more. 16 lost their lives. For all we know, he probably attacked far more that hasn't stepped forward. And I mean, these are the people we should remember, because they are.
Where did they come from? What are their names? What did they do? Are they what ethnicity? I mean, this is stuff, and I'm not asking ethnicity because of the interest. It's because you want to see who that we targeted and the demographics behind it and stats. Who were these people? That's just saying 16 people, 16 murdered, and maybe it's to protect them. I don't know. The identities, but I agree with you. You never hear much from the victims. It's always these guys that turn out to be the kings, and it's just not quite right.
And a lot of them enjoy it, which is unfortunate. They like the attention. So, of course, again, I'm probably going to be called a hypocrite because I dedicate my show to serial killers, but I do tend to try to highlight the victims as well. Try as best as I can to bring forth the story of those that were killed or attacked by these animals.
You're doing very well, Thomas. I just wanted to interrupt you again. You know, that's the one thing that I find you do really well. And I've heard people compliment you on that as well. And I have to say, I think I've said it to you before, is you do, you take the time and you actually look at what the victims go through. So, yeah, kudos to you, honestly.
Thank you. Very nice of you to say. So number six on the list here is Andreas McGay, operated 2012 to 2013, killed at least three women. You have written here, pin, rape, strangle with own underwear. Oh yeah, he pinned them down. Right, I see. Yeah. I see. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. And this too was Pretoria, but in Ondersteport.
Yeah, so Ondersteport is actually not far from where I used to live. None of these places are, but Ondersteport, there's a big veterinary clinic there as well, which is one of the best in the world. It used to be. I don't know if it is anymore. But Ondersteport is one of those places as well where it's become much more dangerous than it used to be. And he seems to have operated in that area as well. A lot of criminal behavior. And once again, you can see that it's that behavior where it's disorganized and it's just a matter of just using whatever's at your disposal. So in this case, it'd be an underwear.
Just looking for someone to rape and murder. And
opportunistic, I think, is the word I was looking for. Very opportunistic.
And people like him are actually the majority of serial killers. People just out in the world, and they have desires that they want filled, and they just lash out randomly.
That's
until they either kill themselves, die from natural causes, or are caught by authorities. And then we have a very interesting case here. Again, it's when it comes to South Africa, I mean, race is the elephant in the room due to the history of the place. And so far on the list, I think most of these people have been black Africans. But here we have Hart van Rooyen. Judging from his name, I suspect he was of Dutch origins.
Yeah, so he was an Afrikaans guy, Hart van Rooyen. And basically with him, you actually have to read the story there, Thomas. I think it's quite an interesting story, to say the least, because he was suspected of so many more girls that he murdered, and he was a pedophile, and there was a whole bunch of stuff that was written about him. Every now and then, there'll be an outcry to say, let's try and see if we can pin more stuff on him and, you know, find out a little bit more. But what you can do if you want is you can actually go have a read through. There's quite a bit of information regarding him, but there's also some mysticism, as in he's become sort of a legend in his own right in South Africa, one of those people that is one of the South African rock stars, as you say, when it comes to serial killings and being what he is. So I would definitely recommend, you know, if you have some spare time and free time, delving into everything he's done and all of the news articles and everyone and his partner that he was doing these things with, if I recall correctly, it could take you could jump into a rabbit hole and you would never come out, because it's one of those cases where you could just lose yourself in what you're reading. And it's very, very interesting. But at the same time, if I had to go down that rabbit hole, I probably wouldn't come back out until, you know, I don't know when.
I can read the Wikipedia summary for our dear listeners' benefit. Van Rooyen and his female accomplice, Joy Hardhoff, are believed to be responsible for the abduction, sexual rape, and murder of several missing girls aged between 9 and 16 years old across eastern South Africa. In early 1990, when faced with arrest after the escape of their latest kidnap victim, Van Rooyen killed Hardhoff before committing suicide. Despite later evidence against them, the two were never formally convicted due to their deaths, and the bodies of their alleged victims were never found. So it's a gruesome case, and it's a killer duo, apparently, and I've put it on my topic list. Several of the names that we go through today will be covered here exclusively on the Serial Killer Podcast. Hopefully I can make a whole episode. It's the most difficult thing when doing these exposés is, of course, the research, because I don't make this shit up. I have to actually base it on.
No, you do a lot of research in your stuff. I was actually saying to someone today as well, I've been impressed since the start. I mean, when you delve into explanations of things, I think the thing that I probably remember the most, the clearest, is your explanation of, and this is going to sound very wrong, but how the electric chair in Ted Bundy's case was administered and the steps leading up to that. And you paint a picture where you can actually see it in your head as well. So, and a lot of us don't think about that, all the processes that go into strangulation, or what the victims feel when they go through it, and how gruesome it actually is when you actually do the research around it. So yeah, no, you do delve into a lot of research when you do your cases. With Gert van Rooyen, I think he would make a very, very interesting, as I said, rabbit hole to jump into and to dive into and to see if you can find out a bit more. There's a lot of stuff about him, I think.
Yes, it's a lot of links here. So yes, I will probably be able to do a full expose on him. So that's good. I mean, child killers, they are the worst of the worst. And people need to know that evil like this exists so we can fight it. One thing that struck me when I read about Gert van Rooyen here is that immediately there's a lot more info when I Google him. There's a lot more links, and there are a lot more text on his Wikipedia page than the other guys that we have talked about so far. And I suspect, again, this is controversial, but he was white, the other guys were black. It strikes me as maybe that's played into it, that as soon as there's a white guy in South Africa being a serial killer, more media exposure than these black guys, that it's impossible to find more than their name and how many they killed. But yes, you know, we have the list here. We are at number 7. There are 27 cases on the list. So you know what, Mr. Dolby? I hadn't planned on doing this, but this has been such an interesting talk. And I think we have material for a part 2.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And so it is that we come to the end of the saga of part one of this conversation regarding serial murder in South Africa. Next episode will include the second and final part of this dialogue. So, as they say in the land of radio, stay tuned. Finally, I wish to thank you, dear listener, for listening. If you like this podcast, you can support it by donating on patreon.com/theserialkillerpodcast, by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, facebook.com/thesk podcast, or by posting on the subreddit The SK Podcast. Thank you. Good night and good luck.